Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes in caves. Going to cons is our escape. It's like Mecca for geeks in a star-filled sky, where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Comics talk for comics fans.
Hey everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Long Box Guys. I almost said something else. With me as always are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid, Joshua Opper, my buddy. I hope you're drinking Mighty Squirrel over there. What are you drinking?
I am not. I'm drinking Treehouse's Haze, one of my favorite beers. I have an upset stomach, and this is the cure.
Beer is the cure. That's wonderful. I thought maybe you were drinking Mighty Squirrel today because today, wasn't there a big day for them today?
No, they open on Friday.
I thought they did a cold open today.
I'm doing going to the sneak preview opening tomorrow night.
Ooh, aren't you fancy? I know they're starting to open up. Our good friends at Mighty Squirrel Beer, they are pretty cool, I hear.
They are.
What's your favorite on that one?
Cosmic Distortion, their double IPA.
Cosmic Distortion, double IPA. Tommy, what are you drinking over there?
I'm drinking water because I've been having migraines all day, so
yeah,
I'm
sorry
taking
to hear
it
that.
Easy.
Like I said before, only Mikey would wish migraines on his worst enemy. I do not wish migraines on anyone. That is horrible. Mike, how are you doing, my friend, and what are you drinking?
I am doing excellent, and I'm drinking water because I might have to drive after this podcast.
Drive where?
None of your business.
Ninja? All right. That's fine. You know what else is none of my business? What this podcast is about this week, because I forgot.
Animal Man.
Animal Man. Oh, Animal Man, really?
Yeah, it does whatever an animal can.
Yeah, Animal Man. Animal Man does
whatever an animal can.
Candy Climb. Yes, indeed. This thing writes itself.
Pretty much.
Yeah, Spider-Man only had one animal. Animal Man has all the animals.
Obviously.
Animal Man should be way better than Spider-Man, and I'd like to point out, he is not.
How dare you accurately describe this hero?
I'm in 100% agreement.
Mikey, why don't you give us a little background on Animal Man?
So Animal Man, a.k.a. Buddy Baker, first appeared in Strange Adventures number 180 back in 1965. He was created by Dave Wood and Carbine Infantino. And he originally was a guy out in the woods hunting, and he came across a crashed spaceship, and he got irradiated, and it gave him these morphic powers where he could mimic any animal that he was in the close proximity of. Now, over time, these powers grew and grew, and we'll probably talk about that more later. He was kind of a forgotten hero, literally a forgotten hero, because he only had around 10 appearances before Crisis on Infinite Earths. So that's over 30 years or so of comic books that he rarely appeared in because he wasn't very popular. In fact, he didn't even have the name Animal Man at first. It was just A Man. And then after a while, they were like, no, A stands for animal. He gets a revival after Crisis on Infinite Earths because Grant Morrison decides, okay, I'm going to take him and I'm going to run with him. And he does an adult-themed comic, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in more detail later. And that launches Animal Man into popularity that he had never known before. Eventually, Animal Man goes on to be one of the founding books of the DC mature line Vertigo. Animal Man also, at that time, joins Justice League Europe and enters into the mainstream of comics. Later on, he's also a member of Justice League United and just the Justice League. He has a lot of team-ups with Swamp Thing, and the reason behind that is because Alan Moore created the Green, an intrinsic space where all plant life exists, and Swamp Thing is the elemental protector of the Green. It turns out those aliens who were in that crash ship didn't just give Buddy Baker the power to mimic animals. They connected him to what's called the Red, the morphic universe that connects all living creatures. So Buddy is probably one of the most powerful superheroes in all of creation because he can mimic the powers of any animal. He has gone on to not just do animals on Earth. As he went into cosmic adventures later on, and he started reaching out his morphic field and grabbing powers from aliens that were nearby. He's also used the powers of diseases and viruses. So if he's near Superman, he could actually literally have the powers of a Kryptonian. Although he's never really effectively used his powers until his run in the New 52, which I'm sure we'll also talk about when we're recommending series. One of the things that's interesting about Animal Man is he is an animal rights activist. Not because he can understand animals. It's not that. He's just one of the most empathetic heroes there are. And he understands everything from the animal's point of view to the point where he feels that it's wrong to eat other animals. It's wrong to wear leather. His jacket, although it looks like leather, they make a point to mention that it's made of denim because he would never wear leather because he thinks it's wrong. He also is one of the most dedicated family-oriented superheroes you're ever going to run into. He's been married for most of his career and has a son and daughter. Depending on which run you're talking about, they may be a little older or they may be a little younger. But everything he does is based on protecting his family and his family's interests. And so he uses his powers initially to be a stuntman so he can provide a living for his family. He doesn't really want to be a superhero, but he gets pulled into it because he knows he has to protect his family. So that's another cool aspect about Animal Man. I'm sure you guys have read some series. Tom, I already know which comic that you are going to talk about. So you want to go first?
It's a comic book that, even thinking about it, almost makes me teary-eyed. It was, I think it was one of the Vertigo ones. It was definitely an adult theme. What was the name of the supervillain? I always call him Captain Cyanide.
No, it's Animal Man number 7. The title of it is Death of the Red Mask, and he's the Red Mask.
The Red Mask. Now, if you're a supervillain, there are a lot of cool powers out there that you can have. But if you're a hardcore supervillain, Death Touch is pretty damn cool. And that's what Red Mask had. He had a death touch. But here's the thing. He didn't really want to be a supervillain. He kind of wanted to be a superhero. Now, if you're a superhero, death touch, not the greatest superpower to have. So he was a very conflicted individual who eventually, by the end of the comic book, commits suicide. Animal Man tries to save him, tries to talk him off the ledge, but to no use. It's a really powerful comic book. It's well written, and this is just a terrific comic.
One of my favorite quotes is from that book when Red Mask, he takes his name from the Mask of the Red Death because he loved the Poe story, and in that story, the Red Death is just a hollow creation. When they reveal what's underneath, there's nothing underneath the robe, right? It's just death personified, and that's what really he becomes. And after he gets that power, he does become hollow inside. He fights Captain Triumph, who is actually a minor character in the DC universe, but he's not trying to kill Captain Triumph. He just thinks, I'm a supervillain. I commit crimes with my buddy the Veil, and we're just this is how it works. And Captain Triumph comes, he beats us up, throws us in jail. And everything is going fine except for, you know, he has Death Touch, his girlfriend who he loved dearly leaves him. And then his best friend, the Veil, the only guy he could really communicate with, goes insane and gets thrown into Arkham Asylum. So he retires from supervillainy. And when he gets diagnosed with cancer is when he decides, okay, I'm going to go out in a blaze of glory. So he reactivates all his robots and they start causing problems all over the city. And he's tiltering on the edge of the building, and Animal Man goes to grab him and pull him back. And he's a villain. He's the villain of the story, but he stops Animal Man from doing it because he would have killed Animal Man. Deep inside, he is not a bad guy. He wants to be still the good guy. And when he does finally decide, I've had enough, I've always wanted to fly, he jumps off the building and realizes, holy shit, I can fly. All this time I was a villain. I can fly. This is the greatest thing ever. Hits the ground.
Splash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He could not
fly. We can all fly for short, short spurts.
Yeah, exactly. When I read this comic, it was in 1989, and this is the first comic I ever read and said, who the heck is this writer? Because I wanted to read everything else that they wrote. This is why I fell in love with Grant Morrison, is because of this comic. And this is why I've given this comic to so many different people, because it's, in my little personal history of comic book reading, this is one of the most important comics I ever read, because I had read the Frank Miller stuff in Daredevil. I had read The Return of the Dark Knight, but nothing ever made me question everything that was going on like this comic book. And when I went back and read some of the other comic books that Grant Morrison wrote in this series, I realized, wow, Bill Maher, you don't know shit about comics, because comic books are definitely adult. And so what I am going to recommend is, if you don't want to read issue number 7, go ahead and check out issue number 5 of that same series. It's The Gospel of the Coyote. And in it, Crafty Coyote, who is a parody of Wile E. Coyote, escapes from the Looney Tunes universe by going and talking to the creator and asking him why they have to suffer and are constantly being blown up and, you know, run over, etc., for other people's amusement. And as a punishment, God, the creator, sends Crafty Coyote into the DC universe, where the first thing that happens is he gets run over by a truck. So this coyote is walking around with this gospel where he's trying to say that, you know, all these things that are important to him, and he keeps on getting killed in horrible, horrible manners. And Animal Man, being that empathetic hero, tries to rescue Crafty Coyote. And he thinks, okay, I finally found someone who can empathize with me, and he hands the gospel, which is this whole backstory, to Animal Man, and Animal Man can't read it because it's just gibberish to him. And at the end of the comic, a hunter kills Crafty Coyote, and his suffering ends. And it's got a very Jesus allegory to it. And as they pan back out in the last panel, you see the creator, the comic book artist, is erasing Crafty Coyote. This is one of the themes that Grant Morrison used in Animal Man, was dissecting the medium of comic books and the power that the creator has over his own creations. It plays a lot in all of his philosophical understanding. And one of his big philosophical points that Morrison uses in the Animal Man series is, and other series like Justice League and Batman, is the Omega Point. But I am not a philosopher like Josh is. Josh, can you kind of explain what the Omega Point is?
So I think the essential cosmology of the Omega Point is, so Pierre Teilhard de Chardin was a Roman Catholic paleontologist. He came up with basically that the universe itself is a closed system. And so as humanity and all of creation sort of has this cosmic workflow into it, as we approach the end, all things start to converge closer and closer and closer until we get to the end of time, and time sits just outside of that cosmological point. So when you're seeing that the artist in that comic erase that, you're seeing the sort of the cosmological collision of the weight of every universe starting to press in as things come to an end. So for the coyote, his omega point is the artist and the eraser, right? For the rest of us in the universe, it's the entropic amount of time that we all have to exist before the universe restarts. So the omega point is really this delineation of everything's end and how everything is a closed system in some way.
Listening to those two last rants makes me want to kill myself. It's so depressing on both sides there, guys. Let's liven it up. Tommy, do you got an animal man that doesn't end in a suicide or Jesus being killed in coyote form?
So I'm also going to recommend from the Grant Morrison run, but I'm just going to recommend that you read volume one of the collected versions of Grant Morrison run, which includes both of the issues that you and Mikey have recommended. But it also includes Animal Man going up against the Bwana Beast.
Oh, yes.
The Bwana Beast attacks a Star Labs research lab that is working on anthrax because one of his friends, a primate that is highly evolved, is being used as a test subject. And so he rips apart the lab and frees his friend who is dying. And Animal Man has been tasked with trying to find whomever ripped apart the lab and to retrieve the test subjects and to bring this person to justice, et cetera, and so forth. And Animal Man finds Bwana Beast, finds out what's happening, finds out what research is being done, finds out that it's not on the level and that it's not anything for good and that it's really harsh testing that's being done. And the whole encounter not only leaves Animal Man with letting Bwana Beast go, but it also changes Animal Man fundamentally and makes him the animal rights activist that he becomes. It changes him. It makes him want to be a vegetarian. It makes him go home and throw out all the meat that's in his refrigerator and changes his whole lifestyle and gets him thinking in a totally different way because he sees the suffering of all the animals that are being tested upon in the research labs. And so for me, the whole run is very good, but also, like, if you just read those first issues, Grant Morrison is tackling a number of very, very large issues in society, along with not only tackling some of the different issues in the comics medium itself.
I agree with you. That is one of the best of – that was going to be my third recommendation from that run – was the Bwana Beast episode. There are a number of different themes that Grant Morrison likes to include in his runs of comic books. And some of those you've mentioned, he loves obscure characters like the Bwana Beast. He loves using dialogue in a realistic manner. So when Buddy is throwing out all the meat, his wife is like, "What the hell are you doing? You can't just change our entire lifestyle just because you want to do that. We have to talk about this. This is a marriage." He breaks the fourth wall constantly. He shows parallel worlds. It's the ultimate Grant Morrison series. But even more than that, there's another series that Grant Morrison also wrote part of, and that's the New 52. Excuse me, not the New 52. It's called 52, which I've been encouraging you guys to read. It's four graphic novels. 52 is by four of the best writers in comics, Jeff Johns, Greg Rucka, Grant Morrison, and somebody's name I'm forgetting. And they do such a phenomenal job. And Grant Morrison handles the cosmic stuff. And it's Adam Strange, Animal Man, and Starfire who get pulled and lost into space. Adam Strange's Zeta Beam screws up. Those three get lost in the cosmic universe, and Adam Strange is blind. And the whole time they're trying to get back to Earth so Buddy can be with his family. And one of the things they develop is a relationship between Animal Man and Starfire that is not romantic. It is like Buddy treats her like his best friend because their survival is based on it. And when they get back to the Earth, his wife is jealous of Starfire, but there's never any romantic feelings shared between Animal Man and Starfire. They don't use that worn out trope. They go beyond that. And that's also amazing too. And that really goes into Buddy Baker's powers and how powerful he can be because he's taking on these obscure cosmic threats and he's not anywhere near animals. Josh, what about you? Do you get a Animal Man?
So I'm going to quickly jump ahead to the 2011. It is the New 52 written by Jeff Lemire.
Yes.
And pretty much everything in that series where him and his family are on the road and on the run, I really enjoy. But I'm also going to talk about Animal Man's powers a little more and one of the things that bothers me. So I know we're supposed to talk about the things you love, but I have to say sometimes in DC, and I get that they have sort of found the parallel with the green and the red, and then they just started attributing other people to this trope that they've created, right? So Vixen, right, also is revealed to be part of the red, Animal Man. And then once Animal Man has the further exploration of his powers, he starts being able to reach into space and other planets and other races like Superman. And this, when people, I feel like they solve problems through explanation of powers rather than through limitation of people's powers. And I would rather see people solve problems in interesting ways from a storytelling perspective than from a, I'm going to get bailed out by this sort of troublesome description of how I get my powers. And I feel the same way very often about people like Doctor Strange and people who have magic abilities. They used to do it a lot with all the technology-based heroes like Iron Man and Batman, people who just have things that they shouldn't have for some reason.
Are you saying Batman didn't have a reason to have shark repellent?
There is no reason to carry a tumbleweed arrow. And if there is, you should listen to the goat. I'm just saying that there are sometimes I do not like how people use – how it ends up basically being – I don't know if it's not necessarily lazy storytelling, but it's problem resolution through sort of this vague idea of how people get their powers. I really, really enjoy the idea that Animal Man can draw on the powers of the creatures of Earth to fly and how he sort of has to one-off those. He has to sort of decide to take one thing over another in order to solve his problems. And that's what makes the character and his power set interesting. And when they supersede that to make him be able to solve these galactic problems or other issues with suddenly I have Superman strength because I'm next to him, I don't really enjoy that aspect of the storytelling around the character.
And also, initially, Animal Man had to have that animal near him in order to borrow the power. So he was always looking, he was always trying to reach out for that animal's power to be around him. So it was a further limitation in that the animal had to be somewhere near him in order for him to borrow the power.
And they had that limitation on his power for quite a long time. But as time progressed, he just got better at extending his morphic field. Yeah. I agree. It's limiting a person's power and letting them come out with creative ways to get out of problems is a lot easier. Well, it's a lot better for the narrative, right?
Yeah. But something I enjoy more.
You should never read the early John Jones Martian Manhunter stories then. Because you wonder why he has so many superpowers? Because at the end, how's he going to get out of this one? I don't know. He has this superpower now. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Now you turn into stone.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, sure. Stone.
Yeah. That's the ticket.
Martians
yeah.
Martians can turn into stone.
Yeah.
Martian Manhunter, whom I've seen naked.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, I've talked about this once or twice before. One of my favorite comics of all time was this odd comic where Aquaman was fighting this new supervillain who was super strong, and he picks up Aquaman and he throws him across the earth, and he lands in a desert. And he's like, get out of there you are, fish man. Let's see how well you fed out. And Aquaman's like looking around. He's in the middle of the desert. He's like, all right, pretty fucked. But he finds a way to find water by, you know, digging between two sand dunes. And he has to figure out a way out of the desert first without any of his superpowers because he's in the middle of a desert and the desert's leeching all his strength, all his coolness. That was a great comic book. The entire comic book was him getting out of the desert, getting back to the ocean. You would have hated this part, Josh. He swims down to some kind of superpower water spot and gets extra superpowers and beats the shit out of the guy. So that part you wouldn't have liked, but the whole desert part was really cool. Heavy water. I think you swam down to heavy water. Yeah. That's a thing, sure. It is a thing.
It is a
thing, yeah. But it's not a thing that gives you superpowers. It's a thing that really, really, really helps you with uranium production. True. But not a lot else. Just saying. Does anyone have any last words to say about Animal Man? Something that's not so goddamn depressing?
Don't get me wrong. Animal Man's not that depressing a book. It's just really well written. It makes you think about stuff.
Depressing stuff.
Depressing stuff mostly, but, you know, stuff. Yeah, not fun stuff. No, not fun stuff. Like a whole family on the run from the law for issue after issue after issue. But, you know, right. I mean, you're thinking they're all going to get captured and die. So you're thinking.
You're thinking that.
Yeah, you're thinking that, so it's not happening, but you're thinking that. Animal Man always did strike me as a little bit more dark, but it was always a good read. I always enjoyed reading him, so I guess it's got that going for it.
Or it lives pretty close to being in the – he lives pretty close to being in the world. He has real-world problems that can't be solved by his superpowers, and that is inherently depressing.
We're going to have to do a history on Strange Adventures, the comic that he first appeared in, because that's got a wild group of obscure heroes that starred in that over time.
I agree.
Fair enough.
We're four white guys. We have plenty of time left to do as many podcasts as we want, because that's all we do nowadays. So no more last words on Animal Man. I always thought he was cool. Did Bwana Beast, by the way, so Bwana Beast has to take two powers. When Bwana Beast was near the gorilla or whatever primate had anthrax or was in the anthrax line, did he ever combine like the powers of the gorilla with the powers of anthrax? Because that's a bad power set.
No.
The images from that book with the test animals are horrific.
Jesus Christ, Mike, you suck balls.
I'm sorry. I'm just telling you, it's just bad. Bwana Beast went insane.
Yeah, Bwana Beast did go a little crazy.
And you know, he combines.
Bwana Beast was
he combines two animals together to form a chimera, and it's not like they just separate after a while or anything. That's their new life together. So he's got a horrible power set. It's just horrific.
Yeah. He is a monster, and he should be stopped. And if he was driven insane, it wasn't a long drive. That was
Is he horrific? Or is he a one-man jackalope selling machine?
Who wants a jackalope? I want a jackalope.
Yeah.
Who wants a unicorn? Dude, don't fuck with me. Whoa. I really want a unicorn. I got a narwhal and a horse over here. We can make this shit happen.
Or you combine a llama and a piranha and you get... Carl.
What is wrong with you?
I just like eating human hands.
Yeah. Let's move on. Mikey, my good friend, my soulmate. What do you have in front of the long box?
At the front of the long box this week, I have the Green Arrow number 45, dealing with the aftermath of the first issue of Heroes in Crisis. It is... Yeah, all right. I'm going to keep it depressing.
Another super fun comic book you recommended, by the way.
Yep. This is written by Julie Benson and her sister Shauna Benson. I have never been a fan of their writing, but this one kind of changes me around. It is the wake for Roy Harper after he dies in Heroes in Crisis. I read it because I wanted to be able to talk eloquently about it for one of our favorite listeners, Diane, because I know that was her favorite hero. And it's got a lot of good themes in it. There are a couple things that I would have done differently, but I'm not a comic book writer, so fuck me. What do I know? The book itself is really good. They show the fact that Roy Harper was not just a superhero. They have his civilian friends there also talking about the impact that Roy had on their lives, including one person that Roy was the sponsor for during recovery. And she goes on to say that without Roy helping her recover from her addiction, that she would have died. And she compares him to a superhero. Basically, the whole thing is all these people are mourning the death of Roy Harper, but the overarching theme is that everybody can be a superhero in their own small way. And I think that's a beautiful theme that they have in this comic. Also, Green Arrow is a dick. And we all know Oliver Queen's a dick anyways, and he's blaming everybody but himself because he realizes that he was a mentor to Roy Harper, but he wasn't the father figure that Roy needed. And he failed him many times over and blames himself for never making it up to Roy and being the person that Roy needed him to be. So it's a great look at Oliver, too.
I'm going to take my tangent off Mike's recommendation to say, Tom was my hero this week. Tom, why don't you tell us a little about what you did this week to help the homeless people in Boston?
Oh, that's awful nice of you to bring up. You're my hero, Josh. You donated 144 socks to this.
Because 44 is your lucky number.
It is indeed. So every year around Thanksgiving, I start collecting socks for the homeless. I've been doing it now for maybe 6 or 7 years. Every year I seem to get more and more socks because everyone knows Thanksgiving time's about to start begging me for socks. And we go out and we do a little giveaway. We walk around some of the poor neighborhoods. Any place we know there are homeless encampments, and we know where a lot of those are now because we do a little outreach here in the city. And we give socks away to people who need it. It's getting pretty cold here in Boston. I was homeless at one point, and I can tell you right now, a nice warm pair of socks when you're living in a tent or living on the sidewalk is the greatest thing in the world. It feels so good to put on nice, clean socks. Oh, it's just so nice. And we take it for granted. And the people I'm giving socks to, I swear to you, they do not take it for granted. They get really happy really fast, and it really makes their day. So with Josh's very generous donation of 144 pair, we actually gave out 460 pairs of socks. And guess how long that took me to find the people for that?
2 hours.
Tommy got it just about on the nose. It took me about 2.5 hours of walking around Boston Commons, Downtown Crossing, Faneuil Hall, a little bit through Chinatown, and then over to the Bridge of Death, which is our big meth area, which is over by the hospital. Well, we gave out sandwiches. We gave out some coffee. We just had a great time talking to people. A lot of those people out there are starting to know me a little bit. So, you know, it was like meeting friends and handing out socks, and it was a great time. I really suggest people do that to get out of their comfort zone this season and get out there.
I know, Tom, you used to belong to, what was that group, the Real Hero Group?
The Real Life Superhero Movement.
The Real Life Superhero Movement. And I know that maybe that sometimes isn't always the greatest movement on the planet, but I know that you guys, particularly you, took donations, did needle pickups, and always did the right thing. And I say the long box, mostly Tom here, is doing the right thing around the holidays to do the do what he can for everybody in the community, whatever community you've been in, Tom, whether that's been New Orleans, San Francisco, Memphis, or Boston. I appreciate it, and I'm gonna use one more time in the sentence just to piss Mike off, and then yeah.
Well, thanks. You know, we also do the needle pickup. We got about. I got us on a tangent here of saying the word
Yep.
We picked up this year around 4,000 needles off the street. It's a lot of needles. People ask me, I had a cop ask me why I was doing it last week. And I'm like, look down, there are needles. Why wouldn't you pick them up if you know how to do it? But that was a good tangent, Josh. Thank you. Mostly because it was about me. And, you know, I'm a narcissist. Tommy, what do you got in the back of the long box?
In the back of the long box, I have the new 52 Futures End by Brian Azzarello, Jeff Lemire, and Patrick Zercher, released it back in 2014 in the collected editions. This was, you know, a story of an AI taking over the world, turning people into cyborgs, a Batman going back in time to find true love. You know, just your average, everyday story of Bruce Wayne sending Terry McGinnis back in time to stop Brother Eye from coming into being and taking over the world. And, of course, Terry McGinnis failing and finding love along the way.
Dear Jeff Lemire, I love your writing except for time travel.
I was going to say, Josh, you would hate this story. Tom and Mike, you might like it.
I own the series, so I did like it.
Quick question. Do you know if Zercher is any relationship to Philip Zercher?
I have no idea.
Inventor of the Zercher squat, one of the greatest squats known to gym rats around the world. It's the only time I've ever heard the name Zercher before.
I have no idea.
Look at this Zercher squat. It's awesome.
This story had a lot of different subplots and a lot of stuff going on. It was very interesting. It was very cool. Had some great artwork as well. Yes, Mike.
No, I was just pointing out the number of times you said
It was a great story. If you can get past the time travel and past all of the associations with time travel and the back and forth with time travel, and there is a bit of that, then I recommend it.
It's one of the first... It's one of the first comics where they introduce Batman Beyond into the regular DC universe. So it's kind of a big deal for those fans of that cartoon.
And it's kind of a big deal for Terry McGinnis because it is the first time he gets lucky. Because he admits it's his first time in the book. And of course he goes for a bad girl, Plastique.
Well, yeah, you gotta go with the bad girls. The bad girls are the best.
Yeah. I at first thought you said Batgirl, and I was like, really?
No, no, it goes for Batgirl.
Time travel thinks this got to end.
Hey, it might have been Batgirl. She couldn't feel it, though. Might the time travel.
Whoa. All that nice shit Josh said about you ruined.
Seriously. Wow. Way to level karma straight out of the gate. He's trying to give you a leg up today, Tom.
Hey, I always think I can say whatever the hell I want because I also do good karmatic stuff. So my deeds, not my words, gentlemen. My deeds, well, not my words. I do have one quick thing to say on the social justice and civil rights side this week. Bill Maher, go bug yourself. Read a comic book, buddy. If you're not smart enough to find smart, intelligent, fun comic books to read that have real relevance, don't call the rest of us stupid. Look in the mirror, stupid. And I like Bill Maher.
He's dead to me until he apologizes.
Yeah,
he's just like God is to him.
He's just ignorant. It's easy to make fun of our hobby and the hobbyists who like comic books. It's an easy target, and he went for a cheap, easy joke.
Yeah, and when you preach against ignorance, against the people you're espousing your values to, and then come at me with a point of view that is completely, utterly ignorant, devoid of thought, devoid of research, no value to it whatsoever, you're dead to me. Maher, you're dead to me.
Maher, you're dead to me.
You're dead to me. You suspect.
All right. I think that just about does it. Let's hit a couple of plugs here. Pensacon's coming up. So is Wizard World. Yeah. I don't think I haven't really submitted to Pensacon yet. I better do that this week.
You should.
Yes, you should.
I've been talking to Steven, so, yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music every week. You can get their music at iTunes or Bandcamp. Or you can go to their website, KirbyCracklemusic.com.
Do they have any Christmas stuff?
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
It's getting the time. I'm going to plug Christmas. I love Christmas. Christmas. Josh, anything to plug?
Happy Hanukkah. Hanukkah. Neighborhood Comics, and that place is clean. There's no menorah in the window, but what can you do? 80 days till Pensacon. Don't forget, we have New Orleans Comic Con, Wizard World Con. Coming up as well, where Mike will probably be present, and maybe some of us will also be present if we can afford it and find the time off. That's all I got. I had a third thing in my brain. It was swirling around like a tumbleweed arrow, but I couldn't bring it to the forefront.
Oh, good callback, my friend. Tell me, what do you got over there? Anything to plug?
I'd like to thank Relpax. Relpax is probably the only way I'm going to get any sleep tonight. Relpax, migraine medicine.
Relpax, it is to migraine medicine what Geek Orthodox is to comic book t-shirts.
Absolutely.
And if you haven't been to geekorthodox.com, what's wrong with you? Those guys are awesome. Static clings that you can throw up in your window, stained glass prints that you can...
Socks.
Johnny Skywalker glasses, which Tom constantly breaks.
My wife constantly breaks those.
Uh-huh. Sure. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure.
Lots of cool stuff over at geekorthodox.com. And we'd also like to thank our Patreon sponsors. You can go to patreon.com/thelongboxguys. And for a mere $1 a month, you can be one of our Patreon supporters and help us pay for the RSS feed and our website. We really appreciate it. And for doing that, you get an extra podcast every month. If you dislike this podcast...
Every
week. And if you dislike this podcast and you really hate someone and you want them to listen to it, give them the Patreon subscription for Christmas. It's the best present for somebody you dislike who dislikes comics, or for somebody who actually likes comics.
Yeah, pick and choose.
No one's a loser in this.
Yeah, it's
and
win-win.
If you have a parent that's very bad with technology and you want to annoy them with a comic book podcast, give them a Patreon subscription and set it up on their iPhone.
And we'll tell them that they're listening to the radio.
You're on the radio.
That is a very valid point, Mike. And we have to come up with our designation.
Yes, we're
WKLONG.
WCMX.
Well, I like that.
92.9. What do we have for a number here? 44.4.
Yeah, I like that, man.
We are WCMX at 44.4. Coming to you live every night.
Low on the station and in our ratings.
Right. You can't find
44.44.
Anywhere, because FM doesn't go that low. But anyway, let's
we
do
the weather every hour on the 88.
That's right.
Yeah. We're not doing numbers.
Hey, folks. It's on the hour, on the half hour. If you want to know the weather, look out your damn window.
And we'd also like to thank those other radio programs that we are friends with, including the NOLA Nerd Couple.
Except and Sammy Savage. We're not thanking you.
We're
got
not?
My eyes on you, Savage. No, we're thanking them.
I love their Losing Lives podcast. They watch the video game movies, so I don't have to. And I shouldn't, because I tried watching one of their movies, and God damn it, I'm still pissed about it.
Which one was that? Was that
In the Name of the King? Don't get me started. I already had a 10-minute rant last week.
But Burt Reynolds was in it. Did you rewatch Double Dragon yet?
No, I can't do that.
Super young Melissa Milano.
No,
Alyssa Milano, and she was 19 when it was filmed, so it's cool.
It's okay to fap. And that's going to do it for us here at the Long Box, guys, this week. I want to thank everyone for listening and for giving us your attention. We do appreciate it. Mikey, dear sweet Mikey, what's this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
And Josh, pretty soon we're going to be traveling the world, seeing comic book conventions all over the place. Which one of those is your sector?
Generally, I think it's going to be Mighty Squirrel Brewing in Waltham, Massachusetts for a while.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be terrific.
So I can
and Tommy, Tommy, you poor son of a gun. How's the head feeling? You doing all right?
Feeling craptastic, Tommy.
I feel better, my friend. And don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate, Bill Maher. Just promote what you love. And you'll feel a lot better.
I didn't need a new Robin Hood. I was fine with the Disney version.
That's what you're going to go with, the Disney version. Buddy, Robin Hood could be made a million times and still be fun.
I mean, other than...
Hey,
Mel Brooks' version was pretty good, too.